Hello and welcome to the Learn Chinese Insights podcast, brought to you by ChineseLearnOnline.com, your progressive Mandarin online course. So my name's Adam. In each episode here, I interview a Westerner who has learned Chinese and will find out some insights from them, you know, how they got started learning Chinese and more importantly, what they're doing with that Chinese today. So I'm happy to have a good friend of mine on the show. His name's Elias. So I'll actually let Elias introduce himself in Chinese. So go ahead, Elias.
好啦，大家好，我是 Elias， 我的英文的名字，我中文的名字是殷科景，我是瑞典人，可是我已经二十多年没有出差瑞典，然后我现在是快二十五年出差台湾。我在这边有自己的公司，公司的名字是 Inspire， 中文安石，然后我们做 B2B 的电话行销。
Okay, so let's see what I picked up from there. So of course you're Elias, you're from Sweden, and but you haven't lived in Sweden for more than 20 years, I guess, and you've been in Taiwan for the last 15 years, and you now run your own company, Inspire, which is a B2B telemarketing company. And I'm sure we'll hear more about that in this episode, how you got started. But before we get into that, let's go back in time and figure out what brought you to Taiwan in the first place.
I met a Taiwanese lady when I was studying in a university in the States. So before then, I certainly knew nothing about Taiwan, and I had no particular interest in China or Taiwan either. I actually had been studying Japanese and was planning to go and live there.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes life takes, unexpected turns.
Sure. So you ended up coming to Taiwan after that?
Yeah, so that was in year 2000.
Okay, so when you first came to Taiwan, could you speak any Chinese?
Basically, no. I took like 10 classes in the States when I was still living there, 10 one-hour classes, but I really don't think that I could actually speak anything. And a matter of fact, I remember very, very clearly landing at the airport, and I had my dog with me, but I couldn't find him. I didn't know where they were going to bring him up, and I remember walking over to the quarantine desk and trying to ask them, where's my dog? And I'm pretty sure I said something completely different, like, you know, I would like a latte, please, you know. At least he couldn't understand what I was saying.
Plus, even if he could understand what you were saying, that's probably not the expression he's expecting you to say at the airport.
Right, in the airport. But fortunately, soon they brought him up, and, you know, from across the hall I hear, wow! Okay, I know where he is now.
Now, in retrospect, did those 10 classes help you prepare?
Not very much, I think. Not very much.
You could have done the same even without having those classes.
Absolutely.
All right, so when you first got to Taiwan, work-wise, what did you start doing? What was your first job?
The first thing I did was enroll in Taipei Language Institute, you know, one of those private schools, right? And so I was studying 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, while looking for a job, because I actually came here on a student visa. So, you know, I had to get one of those, make sure that I could get my visa via the school.
So your plan at that point was to come to Taiwan. Did you know you're going to live here for many years after that?
Well, I mean, I did come here together with my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, I didn't have any plans of leaving. No, I mean, I was coming here to live with her.
And see what opportunities are here.
Yeah. So, no, my plan was pretty much to stay at least for quite a while. Starting by studying Chinese, I guess it took me about 3 or 4 months before I could find a job.
Okay, and what kind of job was that?
Well, then I found a job working in marketing for a local online company called Asian Products, which is one of those online marketplaces, you know, where manufacturers advertise their products.
Okay, so were they looking for a Western person for that job?
Yeah, yes, they were, because they needed somebody to be in contact with potential buyers outside of Taiwan, obviously.
So to get that job, did they care about your level of Chinese?
Not at all, not at all. And a matter of fact, you know, the boss pretty much stuck the three foreigners that he had in a room by itself, kind of closed the door and said, you know, he wasn't too keen on us mixing with the other local staff.
So he didn't want you to mix with them?
No, not really.
What was the reason for that?
Well, I mean, I can't really say, but I think a lot of because of the rule that foreigners need to earn more money, I think a lot of...
He felt there'd be some tension there.
Yeah, I think a lot of employers are a little bit embarrassed by that. You know, even if you can say that there is, you know, reasons for it and whatnot, but just the fact that somebody's by default earning more money, I think that some bosses gets annoyed by that and, you know, afraid that the local employees are going to complain or whatever. I think that's part of it. But, I mean, I interviewed in so many different places, and many places they said straight out to my face, you know, well, we need your English, but I don't want your foreign ideas. And
all right, so let's get back to your learning Chinese. At that point, were you still doing the 2 hours a day?
No, once I started working, I wasn't. I take that back. For a few months while my visa was being processed, I was still studying in the mornings and then working in the evenings, in the afternoon. So that lasted for a few more months. Then when I started working full-time, I wasn't studying at all for quite a while. Mm-hmm. After about a year, I switched to another job, and at that company, we were quite a few foreigners, and we hired a private teacher to come to our office for, I think, once or twice a week. Mm-hmm. So at least I did get some chance to study Chinese.
So at that point, you could see some improvement in your Chinese after taking all these classes?
Well, personally, I didn't feel so much, actually. It was more like I studied and I studied and I studied. And then when I lived there for about 3 years, and I kind of felt like, okay, now I kind of been doing this on an offhand kind of basis for a few years. And now I really need to push it. So I went back and studied 2 hours a day or maybe even more for about 1 month. Mm-hmm. And suddenly all of that Chinese I've been cramming into my head just kind of came together. Mm-hmm. So many of my friends said, "What happened? Yesterday you couldn't speak Chinese, and now today you're fluent. What happened?" So, yeah, I think it was an accumulative process for about 3 years, but I don't think that it really showed up until a point where suddenly, oh, I can speak.
So these 2 hours a day of classes you were doing, was it focused mainly on reading or speaking or listening or what was it?
All on the speaking and listening. I did not start to learn any type of characters until maybe my fourth or fifth year.
Oh, okay. So looking back, would you say that was a good approach to separate the learning that way?
Not necessarily, I think. I mean, I've seen so many people that have gone to, like, Shida, for example, where they learn a lot of characters from day one, and some of them really have learned Chinese so much faster than I did. So I'm not sure if it is. In a matter of fact, I think my way of learning Chinese, and I've never taken a single class learning the characters.
Oh, okay. So even today, you've never formally learned characters?
Never, never at all. In a matter of fact, that's why I signed up for your online classes, was specifically to kind of start learning some more characters.
Okay, sure. So if you could read Chinese characters, how would that change your life now?
Well, see, what I did was that I started using like MSN and WeChat with my Taiwanese friends. So that combined with, you know, like Google Translate, I was able to actually start having like, written conversation with people, you know, first of all, very, very simple and so on. but simple emails and things like that.
So you type in pinyin and it changes to characters.
Exactly. But obviously that is a slow way of doing it, right? If I had actually sat down and said I'm going to dedicate X amount of, you know, minutes or hours every day to learning some characters, I'm sure I would be doing so much better because I can't read like a newspaper or something.
Okay, I see. So let's fast forward now to your current job, working, running your own company, Inspire. In your day-to-day work there, do you use Chinese?
Absolutely. The great majority of my employees, their English isn't great. So I use quite a lot of Chinese every day. You know, it's and definitely that helps, you know.
So would you have been able to start this company if you couldn't speak Chinese?
Well, I would actually argue that by the time I started this company, I couldn't speak Chinese. This was before that, you know, surge that I, so to speak, talked about. So I would really argue that when I did start this company, I couldn't. But then when we started hiring maybe our third or fourth employee and their English wasn't great, that's when I said, okay, I need to really push this. I need to go back and see what I can, how I can really improve this a whole lot.
Because otherwise you're relying on others for translations and such.
Yes. Now, it doesn't mean that maybe I could have run this company fine without Chinese. I don't know. I mean, I certainly know some people that do, but definitely, absolutely, that has helped. I mean, it's not just talking to your employees that per definition kind of need to try to accommodate the deficiencies of the boss, but it's also clients and it's, you know, journalists and it's, you know, getting invited to give speeches here and there and so on. That certainly helps.
So those speeches are done in Chinese or English?
I do a lot of both. So, for example, in 2 weeks, I'm giving a one-hour speech about corporate social responsibility. Now it will be a bit of a challenge, but I'll get through it.
So you have to learn all the buzzwords and such.
Well, actually, okay, I remember very well the first time I gave a speech in Chinese. I wrote it first in English, then I had somebody translating it first into Chinese, then they translated that into pinyin, and then I memorized the whole thing just by words. I got up and gave a 40-minute speech that I don't think that a single person should word of. So since then, I have adopted a couple of rules, and that is that I don't learn new words just for a specific speech, because even if I try to memorize them, in most cases, I won't remember them like on stage when you feel like you're on the spot. So I've kind of realized that, you know, words will come to me slowly and slowly, but if I'm getting up and giving a speech, I'm just going to try to use, you know,
just explain it your way.
Yeah, and try to figure it out. Yeah, and trying to get PowerPoints that are, you know, screens that are illustrating what I'm saying. And I think that works better. People don't expect me to speak perfect Chinese. They are generally quite, you know, happy that I'm accommodating them at all.
Plus, I find that for me anyway, it's good to get to a level where you can express yourself directly, even if you're not using the proper vocabulary. Before, I would prepare speeches in English and get it translated, but, you know, sometimes that's not how you would say it.
Yeah, that might be true, but it's also the fact that, yeah, just like if I try to sound more intellectual than I'm really able to in terms of the language, then it just comes out weird, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, when you hire new employees, do they know right away that they're going to be working for a foreign boss? Or do they show up for the interview and are they surprised?
It depends a little bit on what the position is. I mean, I'm not personally interviewing all the people that we hire. But for the ones that we are, usually if it's a project manager or a salesperson, they'll do it first, an interview with whichever manager is going to manage that person, and then they do a second interview where they know they're going to come in and talk to me.
How many employees do you have now?
We are about 50 people right now.
Oh, okay, right. So if you are involved in the interview process, when they come and see that they have this foreign person sitting there, are they intimidated?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when I'm just, if they don't know that I'm coming in, then definitely it can be a bit of a shock.
And then when they hear that you can speak Chinese, does that ease their tension?
For sure. If I sort of speak, allow them to speak English, I mean Chinese. I mean, very often people put English ability on their resume, which they can't really speak it. I mean, there's been many times when I've, you know, somebody that on the resume, they say that they can speak English, and I say, well, would you please introduce yourself in English? And they look at, you know, my colleague and just says, 对不起,他说什么? And it's like, okay.
Yeah. I've seen, you know, people who, they may genuinely have, you know, high scores in English, but then they have no experience actually talking to people in English.
Absolutely. And I think that's, I mean, I personally think that language learning in many ways is broken all over the world. I mean, I know myself, I got a C in English from my Swedish high school. And, you know, about a year or so later, I was in the U.S. and getting good grades on just about, you know, all papers and the speeches and things like that. And I actually wrote a letter to my high school English teacher saying, I really think that you're grading in a bad way.
Right. And it works the other way too. I've heard of people who've learned Chinese before coming to Taiwan or China, and they may think they're pretty good until they actually get here and have to talk to real people, and all of a sudden, you know, you can't do it anymore.
Right.
Now, in your company, since you're the boss, would you say there's a difference in culture between how you run the company versus how your competitors would run their company?
I certainly hope so. I hope so. I hope we have a culture where maybe people are even more encouraged to speak up and take initiatives and coming up with ideas, and you know, if my idea is not the right one, I hope they are more likely to speak up and tell me so.
And sometimes I find, you know, they may have really good ideas that they want to share, but it's just not in their culture to do so.
Well, it's true. So, I mean, one of the many things I think I've learned over the years is that you can't walk into a group, for example, and say, okay, now we need to brainstorm about this. Please, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Nothing, nothing. Bueller. You know, no, what you do is you ask them to think about this, and then you walk out the room and you give them the space. And when you come back, then very often they have come up with some suggestions.
So these are things you've just found over the years that this process works better.
Yeah, it's something with having the boss in the room that just kind of inhibits them from being creative, I guess, or being open and
sure,
discussing it. So that works better. So yeah, I would like to think that we are slightly different and more open and so on.
Okay. So going back in time, if you were able to redo your whole process of how you learned Chinese, is there anything that you wish you had done differently?
Well, I mean, like we said, I think probably learning characters earlier would probably be a good thing. I mean, I notice myself, the more characters I can read, I mean, you know, the characters are all around you. So you're kind of...
It's wasted opportunity.
It's wasted opportunity. You know, so I would definitely say that I wish I had learned more characters from the beginning when I was still in, you know, school mode, so to speak. I think that's the major thing.
Right. Now, here's another question. If someone comes to you and says, you can speak Chinese, I heard that's one of the most difficult languages to learn. Is that something you agree with?
No, actually I don't. I learned Russian before in high school. And in my opinion, Russian is harder because it is, it's so specific. Like the verbs you pick and so on changes so much with the context of what you're trying to say. While, you know,
so the grammar rules are more difficult.
Yeah. Now Chinese, of course, for a lot of foreigners, the pronunciation and the tones are complicated. That's complicated to me too. I mean, certainly my employees laugh at me on a, you know, at least weekly basis when I butcher some word or whatever.
Sure.
But grammatically speaking, it's fairly forgiven, right? You can at least get up and running of speaking everyday Chinese, I think, grammatically pretty easily. But in my opinion, the grammar that I learned for Russian was more complicated.
Oh, very interesting. Well, thanks, Elias. That was great. So I hope that people learned something about the process of learning the language, as well as the cultural issues of running a company in China or Taiwan. So thanks once again for doing this.
Oh, thank you.
If you're interested in learning more about Elias's company, Inspire, there'll be links below this podcast towards that. And of course, for all your learning Chinese needs, visit ChineseLearnOnline.com. Thank you.